How well can we see into the minds of others? Does it vary by where we are from? I spoke with Cecilia Hayes about her work understanding mind reading as a learned skill that varies from culture to culture.
Our article says that we learn about minds, we learn to read minds in the same way that we learn to read print. So we don't learn about thoughts and feelings by introspection or by testing out our own theories of what makes people tick. Instead, we are instructed as children by adults about the way the mind works.
When I hear mind reading, I think of science fiction, you know, I can see into your mind. But that's not exactly how you're using it here. What does mind reading mean in this context?
No, that's right. There's nothing spooky about the way we're using the term mind reading. It's something that most adults do a lot of the time. Whenever we try to understand what somebody else is doing by assuming that they have certain thoughts and feelings. So say, for example, you were to pause unexpectedly in our conversation. I might ask myself, why is Sarah doing that? And I might infer that you think that I haven't finished speaking and you want me to continue. So I would be explaining your behavior with reference to thoughts and desires in your head. That would be mind reading.
And so this seems like it would be a very, very useful tactic to have in everyday life.
Yes, all the evidence suggests that we use it a lot of the time, perhaps not quite as much as people used to think we were using it, but it's very important for us to be able to do mind reading. It's one of the things which makes us distinct from other animals as a species, and it's essential for many areas of human life, like the law and negotiating agreements and deciding what behavior is permissible and what isn't.
You compare mind reading to print reading throughout this article. What are some of the basic similarities and differences for those two things?
Well, at the most basic level, they both involve getting meaning from signs. So in the case of print reading, the signs are typically ink marks on paper, and the meaning relates to objects and events in the world. In the case of mind reading, the signs are things like facial expressions and body movements and the things that people say, and their meaning relates to what's going on in the other person's head. So, say for example, I see a poster inscribed with the words concert tonight. That tells me what's going to be happening this evening. And if I see a face inscribed with a smile, it tells me typically that the person is happy or amused.
So those are some pretty general similarities. Are there more specific things that are going on that are similar between reading print and reading minds?
Oh, yes. There are a lot of very specific similarities. So, for example, both of them show cortical specialization. There's areas of the brain which are specialized for print reading, and there are different areas of the brain which are specialized for mind reading. And they're both subject to developmental disorders. So people with dyslexia find it very hard to learn to read print, and people with autism find it very hard to learn to read minds. And those two similarities, cortical specialization and developmental disorders, are very important because the fact that there's a special area of the brain for mind reading and that autism impairs mind reading has been mistaken for a sign that mind reading is inborn and genetically inherited. But the comparison with print reading makes it clear that, you know, it's not a sign of that, because print reading, we know that that is not inborn and genetically inherited. I mean, humans have only been readers for 5,000 to 6,000 years. Most people agree that's not long enough for us to have developed inborn mechanisms for print reading. So those similarities make it clear that mind reading need not be inborn.
There are some examples of mind reading seen in infants. And how is that what we see there different from what adults do?
Well, it's certainly true that infants pay really close attention to people from birth, and that by the time they're about 1 year old, they can predict people's movements. So, for example, if an adult begins a movement that the infant has seen before, say reaching for a cup, the infant's gaze, their eyes, move from the hand to the cup before the hand reaches the cup. The infant knows where the hand is going. But in our article, we argue that although they can predict behavior, infants are not capable of explicit mind reading. So I think that infants predict where an action is going using the same mechanisms that they use to predict where a rolling ball is going. These are mechanisms of statistical and associative learning which are evolutionarily ancient. We share them with a broad range of other species, other animals. So they're great at predicting behavior, but they don't make those predictions by ascribing internal causes, thoughts and feelings, to the actor or to the ball.
I really like that example you talked about in your article about what would happen to a child that somehow survived alone on an island. And what would they know about their own mind and the mind of others? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Of course, this is pure speculation. Yeah. But if it was a child alone on a desert island that had somehow miraculously managed to survive, then they might well have sensations. There would be what we think of as internal conscious events. But our view implies that they wouldn't conceptualize or think about those experiences as beliefs and desires, thoughts and feelings. Similarly, if there was a group of infants that somehow managed miraculously to survive on a desert island, I mean, they would have the challenge of predicting each other's behavior, but our view would suggest that in just one or a few generations, there's no way that they would come up with our conceptualization of the mind, that would take many generations for them to develop their own distinctive theory of mind.
Really interesting. What's behind that is the idea that mind reading is learned, and that you also mentioned in your article that there's this interaction between culture and mind reading. How does where we are from and how we are raised impact our abilities in this area?
There's now a lot of studies which have looked really closely at what adults say to children about the mind in everyday situations. So it looks like from that research that adults explicitly teach children about the mind. They teach them a culture-specific theory of how the mind works. That's what we learn at our mother's knee, and then when we become parents, we pass on that theory of mind to our own children.
And what are some of the differences that have been seen between cultures and the theory of mind?
Yeah, we're only just beginning to understand this, but the emerging research is really fascinating. So there are plenty of signs, first of all, that cultures vary very widely in the importance that they assign to mental states rather than situations as causes of behavior. So in individualist cultures, such as those of the United States and Europe, we see mental states as very important. But in some other places, like China and Iran, situations are regarded as at least equally important. So what I do is seen to be determined less by what I think and what I want than by my position and status in a social group. Also, cultures vary a lot in whether they see them as being governed by natural or supernatural laws. So, for example, there's a Micronesian culture that believe that my emotions can affect the health of my relatives, even if there's no physical or communicational contact between me and my relatives. So that would be an example of what we would see as supernatural causation of mental states.
Why is theory of mind and understanding mind reading an important area to study?
I think these questions are really important because mind reading is at the root of what makes us human, what makes us different from all other animals. And it's really important to work out how we come to be this way. is this something that we genetically inherit? Is it something that the members of individual cultures have come up with, a theory that they've come up with and that they pass on from one generation to the next? So it's a fundamentally important question about human nature, which also has implications for understanding developmental disorders such as autism, and for education in general. We need to use theory of mind to educate our children, not only about the mind, but about a huge range of other topics. So when a child learns from their parents how to represent the minds of others, it is, as we say in the article, a cultural gift that goes on giving. After that capacity has been acquired, it enables that person to pass on what they know about a whole range of topics to others.
Cecilia, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Sarah. It was a pleasure.
Cecilia Hayes and Chris Firth write a review on mind reading in this week's issue.